Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for people who play with needles. And what is that other stuff?
People who love people who play with needles.
Oh, yeah, that group, that new group. Welcome to our new group, yes. And with us this week, Mary Corbett. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Now, of course, anymore, we always qualify Mary Corbett with one T.
With one T, right.
Did I say that?
No.
I must have said that somewhere.
Well, you commented after I had misspelled your name. I think it was the last time you were on or something. Yeah, I'd used two T's, and you had, in one of your posts on your website, you had mentioned something about misspelling names. It was subtle, but I got it.
It was subtle. Sorry.
As an editor, you know,
yeah. One R.
Yeah, as an editor, you hit right where it hurts. So,
yeah.
So henceforth, it's been Mary Corbett with one T. So.
Well, you're not the only one, if it makes you feel better.
No, it doesn't.
No. Oh, okay.
No.
Sorry.
No, I've spelled your name enough. I should be able to get it right. So, yeah, so I won't make the mistake again. Trust me. Yeah, it's one T forevermore. Yes.
That's right.
So thanks for joining us. What, this is, I think, your third time?
Yeah, I was on here one time, and then the last time I was with my sister.
That's right.
Sarah. Yeah. And then, yep. So
you're
number three.
You're leading the pack. Most appearances on the Fiber Talk, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
there's no medal, though. You know, it's just.
Oh, darn.
Yeah.
So, YouTube.
So you had listened the other day to when I had mentioned about my trade show conference cybersecurity thing and discovering that so many manufacturers do not have their backup off site, that they have their backup on site. And I admitted that I do not practice what I preach and did not, you know, my backups are sitting right there next to my machine, but I do have a little defense in that my machine goes with me. So it's usually separate from them other than when I'm working at home. But then you had written and reminded me about the service you use and how pleased you are with it, Backblaze. And that you've been using that for a while now, right?
Yeah, I have. Yep. It's really good. Yeah. And it's gotten me out of a huge jam just a couple months ago.
Yeah,
my hard drive crashed. And so all I had to do was, you know, sign in on Backblaze and tell them to send me a new hard drive, and there it was with absolutely everything on it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was great. And then I loaded it up. And I mailed the hard drive back, and they refund the cost. So it was, it was easy.
Yeah. See, I've been looking at other services, but when you told me that little piece right there, all the rest of them can take a hike because it's $5 a month per computer, mm-hmm. and to have that kind of thing, what is it? $200. You give them $200 for the drive, and then you get it refunded when you return it.
Yeah, it's $189, I think, and it's it comes with the external, you know, drive that you plug in, and you just, while you run it perpetually, it took me several days for everything to reload onto my computer, and then you just package it up and mail it back.
See, that to me, you know, when you're in that kind of a position where everything crashed and for somebody just here, copy this, you'll be fine. That's, wow.
Yeah.
Well, and the nice thing was when I was waiting for the hard drive to arrive, I had my laptop and I don't, I can't access on my laptop everything that's on my computer. I use Dropbox. You know, a little bit back and forth when I'm traveling or whatever. But with Backblaze, you can sign into your account and you can download individual files.
Yes. So, oh, there it is.
So yeah. I was able, excuse me, to actually work on my regular website stuff with access to everything that I always use through their online app.
So your hard drive crashed and effectively just a little inconvenience, but you didn't lose any work time then.
No, not at all. Nope.
See, that's $5 a month. I'll do that.
Yeah. Yep. It is. It's worth it. And the thing is that, ironically, I have an external. Okay, so on my computer, I use a Mac, and then I have a 4 terabyte external drive on my Mac that I work from. But I also have an on-site backup, which is kept in a Drobo, which is like a redundancy drive.
Oh, those things are beautiful. Those things are beautiful.
But they're
She's gonna tell me it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, it is. And they're very slow. But it's also the problem that it's on site, of course, you know, it's right. just in the other room. So, so I also have the Backblaze backup, and that's the one that I actually use. I've only accessed the Drobo backup, I think, once. So yeah, it's definitely worth it.
Yep. Well, I am now a Backblaze company customer, and I have 2 external drives that I keep stuff on, a 3 terabyte and a 1 terabyte, and Marga has like a 500 gig one, but they're all right connected to our machines, just like you. And but now we have Backblaze, we're covered. So, yeah, you know, that's just it. You can't. Well, we had trouble this week with Marga's machine, and had to get a little Apple help, and that kind of rubbed me the wrong way because I like to think I can fix these things. But then they got me going again. But then, you know, there is just like you, I said to them, you know, everything is backed up on an external drive. They said, okay, then if you're using the Apple system, which is what we use, that should just copy right over. And by golly, we wiped the drive and just copied it right over. And boy, what a godsend that was, because everything went back the way it's supposed to. And yeah, yep. So, all right, Backblaze, Backblaze.
Terrifying moment there.
Yep, Backblaze, Christine.
Got it.
Okay. Yep. And then in our exchange, Mary and I had a couple of exchanges, and I wanted to get some linen. And so then, you know, who better to go to than Mary for what linen do you use as just kind of your staple? And so you were telling me, or told me, you weren't telling, you told me Alba Maxima, and we get it from Needle in a Haystack. And that's your standard. That's your, like, keep a supply around. And when you do it, is that how it works?
Yeah, I like it just for all purpose embroidery. And you can use it for counted work as well. It's a 40 count, but it's a very full weave, and the threads are close together. There's no little holes between them or anything. But it, because it's 40 count, it can translate into counted work as well, drawn thread work, all kinds of stuff like that, pulled thread fillings, whatever. But I like it for general surface embroidery.
Okay, so I'll have no trouble using that for hardanger either, then.
No, not really. Especially if you are doing the old style hardanger, which is a little bit finer.
Yes.
So it's finer than, well, I don't know how to put it. It's twice as fine as the standard hardanger fabric that's been used lately.
Yes.
You know? Because this is 40 count as opposed to, what is it, 22?
Yes, it's 22.
So, so it's a lot finer, but yes, you can use it for that.
Yeah, I have an Yvette book that I have the old style hardanger book from Yvette that I got to get going on that. Too many things in there. So this linen then, I mean, this is your all purpose. Use it all the time. What makes it? Is it more durable? Is it wash better? What do you like about it?
Well, it's there are a couple things I like about it. First of all, it's beautiful. It's got a really nice hand, so it's nice and smooth, and it's not super slubby, Yeah.
Oh, that's
it doesn't
plus.
Have a lot of those little, yeah, it doesn't have those extra slubs in it. Occasionally you'll see one because that's characteristic of linen, but it's not super slubby. And then I swear it is so resilient when it comes to picking things out. So if I pick, you know, stitches out, and it doesn't matter if I'm using a heavy thread or a fine thread or whatever, I can pick those stitches out and look at my linen and it doesn't look like it's been used. And so I can stitch the area again. And if I have to pick it out again, the linen is still just fine. So it's very resilient.
Well, see, I've often wondered that about you, because when you write about your projects, I can tell, I mean, you're upfront about it when you tear things out and redo them. And I often wonder how beat up your linen gets. But it never looks like it in the pictures. So it's because you're using this linen then.
Yeah, I think that's a sign of a really, really good linen, you mm-hmm. know? And it, even when I, so, before I stitch, I'll often pre-shrink my fabric, you know, wash it.
Right.
Just hand wash it hot and cold to get the shrink out. And then while it's still damp, I'll iron it and then I'll transfer, you know, set it up, all that kind of stuff. With this, it's still, when you iron it, it still retains that body that it had when you first bought it. It doesn't feel like it's just softened up to mush or anything.
Right, right.
And it doesn't pill. It's just really beautiful. Yeah. It's a great fabric.
Okay, because that, you know, that is those kinds of things, especially washing them. It always makes me nervous, because then I always feel like you are always fear that you're going to lose the body. You're going to lose the, you know, what matters, and then you might as well be stitching on a dishcloth for all that matters.
If you're working on a good linen though, that is a characteristic of linen, that it retains a kind of crispness. Mm-hmm. After you've ironed it. That's just part of what a good linen does. So if the linen that you're using is pilling and fuzzing and falling apart, you can pretty much be sure that it's not a very good linen.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. Now, the stocking I'm working on right now is, it's a Shepherd's Bush stocking. I think it's 28 count linen I'm working on. And there's a lot of variation in thickness of the fibers. Does this Alba Maxima, are the fibers pretty consistent in width?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm gonna like it.
In fact, the warp and the weft are consistent, which is perhaps somewhat unusual in the common linens that you see on the market for needlework, like Zweigart. For example, when you look at Zweigart linens, often you'll see, you know, a really thin thread and then a thick thread.
Yep.
And then a thin thread and a thick thread. Mm-hmm. You won't see that in this linen.
Okay, because that's exactly what I'm working on. It drives me nuts because it's a Zweigart. I just call it burlap. I mean, it's effectively burlap. But, there'll be a thread that's like three times thicker than the one next to it, which is just this little thin thing. And it really, and I'm cross stitching, and it's really at times hard to get a consistent X, and it's frustrating. So,
yeah. Well, sometimes it helps if you put a backing fabric behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're working on a fabric like that and your stitches aren't as consistent as you would like them, even with cross stitch, you can put a muslin behind it. Like a cotton muslin, and that will help stabilize your stitches.
Okay.
So it's just a thought. I mean,
yeah. Well, worth trying.
You won't have to do that. Yeah, you won't have to do that with the Alba Maxima.
Yeah. Well, that's good to know. Well, I ordered from Needle in a Haystack, as you recommended. I ordered a half yard. So
yeah, the stitcher's half. That's a good sized piece, you know.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm excited for it to arrive. They're really upfront about we're not Amazon, so don't expect it to go out same day. And
that's right.
Yeah. But they've kept me informed, and it's apparently either shipped or about to be shipped. And it's been It's been 3 or 4 days, but I didn't care. I mean, it's not like I have to have it yesterday. So, But yeah, I give them credit. I get an email about every other day showing me the status. So yeah.
Now they have a cream color version of the same fabric. It's not called Alba Maxima. I can't remember what it's called. I can't remember. But anyway, it's cream, but it's the same fabric, and it's very nice too if you're looking for something that's not bright white.
Okay.
So I like the bright white because I take pictures, you know, a lot. Mm-hmm. And the white background, it's easier to see the stitches on a white background.
Yeah. Yeah.
In photos.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. See, the old, that's why we print black ink on white paper in magazines and books, because you can see it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's right.
So, okay. Well, I just wanted to talk about that because I knew you had a type, and I did a quick run through your website and couldn't trip over it. So I would just ask you it. But I knew you had one that you relied on because you did some experimenting with some other stuff not too long ago. And I remember you washing it and it just became a fuzzball and things didn't work out well. So,
but that's also, I think, just to give a little bit of credit, I guess, to the company without mentioning the company, I think that particular linen is made for maybe upholstery or clothing or drapes, you know, that kind of stuff, depending on the weight that you're getting. Oh. It's not really made for handwork. So.
Right. It's not going to hold up for that.
Yeah. It's not the same, but it really, I've never seen a linen fall apart the way that stuff did.
Yeah. That was pretty scary.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, that's, I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. So, Alba Maxima Linen and Needle in a Haystack is where you sent me, and that's a store. I gather from their writings, they're an actual store, and then...
Yeah, they're in Alameda, California, which, incidentally, is where I was born, so I thought that was funny.
That's a nice tie-in.
Yeah. But they're, I've been there. I visited the store probably 10 years ago or 8 years ago. So it was when they were in a different location than they're in now. But it's a fantastic store with a great range of products. But any local needlework shop that carries Access Commodities goods will have access to Alba Maxima, or they'll be able to order it for you. So
that's right. I meant to bring that up. So that's really the key is the Access Commodities that's the source for this linen. That's really what.
Yeah, they're the distributors. It's a European linen, so they bring it in from Europe and then it's distributed to the shops.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
They're the same like people. That, sorry.
Yeah. I was going to say for something like that, if you know you're going to use it, it's almost worth if they have to special order it, getting more than just a stitcher's half.
Right.
Yep. You know you're going to use it anyway. It's not going to go bad. So that way you only have to go through the ordering process once.
And it's a good chunk of fabric because unless you're making massive embroidery projects, that's a lot of fabric for a lot of projects.
Yep. It is. So, okay. So this actually brings me exactly where I needed to ask a question. So I know. So, and it has to do with that, the idea of stitching gigantic projects. So last week, Gary and I were talking to Nicola Parkman about a couple of samplers that she just released stitch guides for. And so I was looking at the guide, and in order to – they're huge. They're gigantic. Mm-hmm. So it varies a tiny bit depending on the count of the fabric. But what I was looking at was it was about 30 inches wide. So what I was running into, it was big. It's really big. And it's depending on the count. I think you can get it a little bit smaller than that, but, and it's longer than that. So then, okay. So nobody wants to work with a frame that large. So clearly, something like a scroll frame would be what came to mind as far as handling this. But then my question is, I don't want to put on stretcher bars if it's 30 by 40 inches or something like that, right? Because this is going to be a disaster. It's going to be impossible to work with. So a scroll seemed more logical. But then I started looking into getting scroll frames, and it seemed like anything over about 20 inches was almost impossible to find. And so I ended up writing to a couple of people, and they said, yeah, we can get it, but we have to special order it. Yeah. So what do you do? Is there a secret that I'm missing? or is it that I just have to special order a 30-inch scroll frame?
Well, so in a situation like that where I'm working on a very large project, I would actually use a slate frame instead of a scroll frame, because then you get tension on your sides. Mm-hmm. And you can leave it, you know, set up. It's well tensioned on the sides. You can adjust the tension if you need to, if there's a change in, you know, humidity or whatever. You can loosen the tension if you're going to put it away for a while, that type of thing. So I use a slate frame. But that's the thing. Even with a slate frame, for something that you're going to have a 30-inch width, you're going to have to special order that.
Yeah.
At least the roller bars.
Mm-hmm. And right. Because the extenders, that's just whatever, right?
Yeah, you just expose. Yeah, mm-hmm. You just expose what you're stitching on, you know, so your extenders can actually be, the sidebars, the slats can actually be pretty short, you know. Mm-hmm. So.
Right. That would make it a lot easier to handle.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because if you're stitching on stretcher bars that are that size.
Oh, my goodness. I can't even imagine.
It's going to be the reach into the mm-hmm. canvas as well, you know, depending on, or the fabric, depending on how you have it set up. You've got to reach
all the way to the middle, right? So you're reaching.
Yeah, or you've got to turn it, or you've got to turn it and stitch sideways or upside down or whatever, and then you end up, you know, messing up the layout of your stitches. And, yeah,
right. So. And see, now in my old school ways, I would have just thrown it in a hoop and then just move the hoop around the piece.
You absolutely can do that if you're working with good fabric and a good hoop.
Mm-hmm. And so this was my concern, though. So I've always done that and never thought twice about leaving something in a hoop. And now everything that I've been reading says that you should loosen the tension on the hoop every night so that you don't stretch the fabric, I guess, in the, you know, in the area where it's bent to conform to the circle. So how much of an issue is that?
I don't know. What I found is it's not so much, excuse me, it's not so much it is the fabric, the stretching the fabric. If it's left in there for a long time, you can really leave kind of a hoop imprint. Mm-hmm. But if you're just leaving it in overnight, you know, it's really not going to kill anything.
Right. That's kind of what I was feeling. Like, how much of a big deal is it really?
If you know that you're going to put it down and the next day you're going to pick it up and you're still going to be working consistently on it, I wouldn't worry mm-hmm. too much about the overnight thing.
Right.
Under certain conditions. So that would be that you're using a good hoop, that you're using good linen, and that your hoop is bound, that you have some sort of protection.
Right.
So you bind the inner ring. Mm-hmm. And then I either set up a piece of scrap muslin that I cut the center out of that goes over the fabric. So the inner ring goes down first, the fabric goes on top of it, a piece mm-hmm. of scrap muslin goes on top of that, and then the outer ring. And then you can cut away the center to expose what you're working on. And mm-hmm. that's going to protect that's going to protect the fabric from the oil on your hands,
yeah,
and from picking up dust and stuff like that on the oil, because that's how you get those hoop rings, you know, that are right. Dirty.
That makes sense. And I've seen that done with saran wrap, which kind of, yeah. I was thinking about that the other day, actually, because I'm working on a piece with silk, and I had thought back to, you know, maybe I should have done this with saran wrap, or with a piece of fabric, and I happen to have muslin laying around, but then I realized if I have, for this particular piece, which is a little bit freehand, it's not a charted piece, if I can't see the rest of what's going on, I'm not going to be able to, you know, you lose sort of the grace of the stem of a flower or something like
that's
that because
true.
You can't
yeah.
see what you're working on. So like a counted piece, I could see covering it with muslin and just exposing tiny areas, but other things, I feel like I kind of have to see kind of where I'm going so that I can, you know, you can sort of sway with things, if that makes
yeah.
any sense.
Except that, well, okay. So if, I don't just cut out a little bit that to expose, you know, that little section I'm working on. I actually mm-hmm. do cut out so that there's about maybe an inch and a half inside
okay.
the ring over the fabric.
And that's it. Mm-hmm.
And then everything else inside is exposed.
That makes sense. And so, yeah. And what I had done with my hoops is, so I wrap the inside and I also wrap the outer one as well.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
and
both
that's
of them
too.
Are, yeah, basically get to the same place
yeah.
that way. And, yeah, I like it, too. I like the feel of it in my hand
yeah.
a little bit better, too.
Yeah, it gives you more to hold on to.
It does. Mm-hmm.
And then the about the saran wrap, I know I do know a lot of stitchers use that. And I know Philippa Turnbull at Cruel Work Company, that's her method as well, to use the saran wrap. And, you know, I would like it if it weren't saran wrap, you know, if it were tin foil, fine.
I totally get it.
I hate saran wrap.
Yeah. I think that's been my reservation is that I think it's a good idea. Like I like the idea of it, mm-hmm. but it's going to be sticky and your hands are going to stick to it. And it just feels like it's going to be pulling on things and stuff. So I almost want to find another, or like use acetate or something, you know, something,
yeah.
Like a cellophane, anything that's not that, so that it doesn't, you know, stick to your hands as much.
I just don't. I just don't like plastic wrap. And it's, you know, come on, you pull it out of the box and then it sticks all over each itself, and then it sticks all over everything else.
Yeah, before I do that, I'm just gonna put on white cotton gloves and be done with it.
That's right.
It'd be easier.
But with using muslin, you don't have to use a new piece every time you switch your hoop either.
Right.
You just
right.
hoop up the same piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so there's options there. So hoop is an option still. Slate frame's an option. So this is good.
Now, if you're working on a piece of fabric that size to do that those samplers, and you're going to use a hoop, I would probably consider something to protect the fabric itself, the excess fabric, because you're going to have a lot of excess fabric.
Mm-hmm.
When it's all done, I think Nicola uses soie d'Alger, which is a silk.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it's a stranded silk, and it's a very nice, easy thread to stitch with. And you can actually, you know, when all is said and done, you could rinse the piece in cold water. I would not rinse it at all in hot water, and I would not steam it. But I would damp stretch it at the end.
Right. So you block it, basically.
Yeah, block it and damp, you know, while it's damp.
Mm-hmm.
And then that should take out any hoop problems, you know. Hopefully.
Right. Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I think, well, this is another, so we've talked about building infrastructure. And I think if I was working on a big piece like that, that would be the right time to try a different type of frame.
Yeah, I agree. I think when all is said and done with a piece like that, especially the amount of time that you're going to put into it, because.
Yeah, I don't want to mess around with hoops and have the whole thing done and then find it's, you know, covered with circles that,
Right. And then you have. Mm-hmm. It's not just the, you know, it's not the expense of the supplies. If you're working, I know one of those pieces is like 36 colors of silk. And,
right.
And so you've got that, you've got the linen, and that's all going to be relatively expensive, but it's not going to be near as expensive as the time you're going to put into that thing.
That's correct.
So, if you're going to make the investment, you know, make the investment in a good frame too, and then you don't have to worry about the hoop, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And that's what we'll do.
Those slate frames, I forget who it was. You had identified someone who looked like pieces of furniture. They were beautiful. But
that's Mark at Mythic Crafts up in Canada.
Yes, there. Yes.
Now he's got beautiful slate frames, and they are really beautiful. And they're kind of a combination between the Millennium frame, mm-hmm. which is the one that Nicola uses.
Yes.
And I have a few of them as well. So it's the roller bar on the top is like the Millennium frame. So you don't have to actually stitch your mm-hmm. fabric to the twill tape. Like you would on a traditional slate frame, but the sides are your typical, you know, slate frame.
Yeah.
So right. they're absolutely beautiful, but there are places also in the United States that make them. So, if you don't want to go with the Cadillac version or the Rolls Royce, you can get them through, Needle in a Haystack. They'll special order them for you. You can also get them through the San Francisco School of Needlework and Design.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So they can special order them. And also, I think, I don't know if Lisa's husband is still making the trestles. But I think you can special order trestles as well from them. So that's if you're looking for trestles to support a big slate frame,
mm-hmm.
and you want it to go whole hog, you know.
Oh my goodness! So, yeah,
that would be whole hog.
That is whole hog.
They take up a lot of room. So if you don't have the infrastructure at home to accommodate a big footprint when it comes to supporting your frame, then you probably wouldn't want trestles because they're bulky.
Yeah.
Every time I've seen you talk about slate frames, the thing that sticks in my mind is that they're a lot of work to set up. Is that the case or not so bad?
They are, but they're worth it if you're doing if you're doing a long-term project. Now, if you're just going to do a project, that's just going to take you a week or two to stitch, I would go with stretcher bars, like the Evertight mm-hmm. stretcher bars. But, and Evertight makes very big stretcher bars too, but I still wouldn't use them for those samplers.
Yeah, it's too big.
But if you're going to be stitching something that's going to take you several months or a year to stitch, it's worth putting it on a slate frame because you have complete control over your tension all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So even if things relax, if your fabric or your work goes through some sort of weather change, humidity or something, environmental conditions, or if you're going to put it away for a while, you can just loosen up the laces and roll the whole thing up. And then when you set it up, it's already set up. You just have to tighten the laces again, and you've got a perfectly smooth, taut surface that's just ideal for stitching. So
yeah.
it is worth it.
Okay. And those ones that the guy in Canada makes, the pictures of them is like you would buy them and never actually use them. You just look at them.
Well, I do have a set of his. I have a set and they're beautiful. They're smooth as glass. They're just really well made and they're strong. So that's that's obviously something that you have to consider first, is that they're going to hold up to that tension that you're putting on that fabric.
Right.
But I have used them. I am using them right now. So they're usable too. You know, they're pretty and they're usable.
Well, I'd be scared to death. I'd put a nick in one of them.
Well, the worst thing is I use them with my, needlework system four stand, you know, which is the stand I always go back to all the time. It's the stand I use the most. And I use the frame clamp with the System 4. Mm-hmm. And I'm using the frame clamp with that frame. And it kind of makes me a little bit nervous because, yeah, you know, but it's fine so far. I'll probably switch, though, pretty soon because it's not super easy to use it with the frame clamp. Mm-hmm. But it works, so.
Yeah.
I feel guilty.
when you have to be ultra careful with your tools so they don't get damaged. I don't know.
Yeah, and I do like beautiful tools, but I'll take functional over beauty every time.
Yeah.
as long as it works, you know?
Yep.
But it's nice when you can have both together in the same tool.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yep. Hey, you wrote a few weeks ago, 6 bad stitching habits. I love that article. Six bad stitching habits and how to overcome them. I don't know if I can. October 4th. Yeah, so it was just a couple weeks ago that you wrote that. And it was 5 and 6 that really caught my eye, because bad habit number 5, putting off the fix. You know, mistake on a piece of needlework often becomes a looming mountain, impossible to scale. At least, or in your case, one I'm too lazy to scale. And I mm-hmm. thought that, yeah, you know, because you read about that every now and then, where someone will make a mistake, and the undoing just makes
undoes
them. Yeah, you know, they just put it away. And then you might read somebody, oh, I made a mistake, and you know, 2 years ago, and now I decided I'll fix it. And right. I thought that was a good point, because whenever I make a mistake, I'm usually so mad, I just start tearing it apart.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. There's some gratification in ripping stitches out when you're angry like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big thing for me, though, is I do have to make myself tear it out right then, because my first inclination is to go, oh, gee whiz, and just set it aside. And sometimes I need to do that because I have to think. But before I get away from it, I always take it out. And then that way I can think without thinking, oh my gosh, I got to go take all that out. So it's better just to rip it out right away. And then the next time you come back to it, it's waiting for you. It's ready. So.
Yeah. Now, it just dips into the psychology of stitching, the mental side, because your number 6 was right along the same lines, you know, stopping short of just finishing a project, and mm-hmm. you know, and who doesn't have, you know, a bunch of those that are almost done, and you know, I don't know what the psychology is there, other than, you know, some people you hear it, I enjoyed it so much, I hate to see it come to an end, and then I can't help but wonder if they don't finish it just because they don't want it to end. They want a little bit more of it because they just enjoyed it so much.
But. Maybe. I can't, with me, it's never that way with me, I don't think. There are projects that I just really enjoy, but usually as I'm creeping to the end of a project, I'm so ready for it to be over.
Oh. Yeah, I agree. I get to the same thing. I'm like, oh, I just don't even want to look at this anymore.
Yeah, I just want to finish it. Yeah. But there are some that I just never get to the finish. So, I mean, I do eventually, but worse than that is the fact that I don't finish them. Do you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So I'll finish all the stitching, and I'll block it, I'll photograph it and everything for the website, and then I'll say, okay, I am going to frame this one and give it to someone or finish it this way or that way, whatever. But I'll take care of that later. And so I put it in a box. And, you know, a year or two later, I open the box and I think, oh, yeah, I was going to finish that one. And so I do have a collection of things. But I always, in my mind, I always tell myself, well, I did it for the website. I really didn't, you know, plan on framing it, you know.
But see, for me, it's, I mean, if Marga didn't want things framed or finished in some way, most of my stuff would never get finished. Because for me, once I'm done with the stitching, that's all I wanted out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to enjoy the stitching and finish it. And I really don't care if it's framed or made into a pillow or, you know, whatever. It just doesn't matter to me. So I don't know. That's just the way I am. And so then Margo will say, well, how come you haven't, you know, we should put this in a frame. Well, go ahead. Go nuts. I don't care.
Well, it's a good thing you have a wife. But the other thing, though, too, is I can use mine over and over again for things to write about, but also as samples. So if I'm teaching someone or I'm trying to convince someone, hey, you really want to do embroidery, or if I'm trying to tell somebody, well, embroidery isn't just that, it can be other things as well, I can take that box out and I have a whole stack of examples that I can show. So, or if I need something to write about on the website, I can always pull it out and say, oh, look what I pulled out. Darn, I forgot about this. But I don't do that too often.
Your own little library of...
And it makes a good reference, too. It's like doing a doodle cloth or a sampler or, you know, just a stitch sampler, not the kind of sampler we were just talking about, but one where you're just practicing stitches. You know, you can do that in a way that's attractive, and it doesn't just have to be on little scraps, and it can become a very effective reference for you, you know?
I was just going to ask, so do you ever stitch, and this is for either of you, do you ever stitch pieces that you don't, so most people will pick pieces because they like the design or it's something that they would like to own, or it's something that they see that, oh, this would be perfect for this other person, so I'll stitch it. Do you ever pick pieces that maybe aren't particularly attractive to you, or they're not your thing? You know, and so you really have no idea what you're going to do with it afterwards because it's not something you really want to have. But there's something about the piece that is, I want to learn how to do that stitch or that technique, or I haven't worked on black canvas, or, you know, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I find that there's pieces that I'm attracted to that I have no idea what I'm going to do with that when I'm done with it, but I want to stitch it because I'm going to learn something, or there's something really interesting about the way it's put together. Mm-hmm. So, and then what do you do with it?
Well, that's the thing. So if you're getting a piece just to learn, then do you actually have to do something with it? You know,
you've
done with it what you intended. You learned what you wanted to learn. So it doesn't really matter if you do anything with it, but you know, chances are somebody out there will like it.
Yes.
So you could always gift it or pass it on to somebody who, you know, happens along and says, oh my gosh, that's beautiful. And you're like, oh, yay.
Take it off my hands.
That's right. But I do that too. I'll pick, even with my own designs, I'll pick color schemes that I would not normally work with, or color combinations that I wouldn't work with, because I want to see how the colors are going to work together. Mm-hmm. Or I'll you know, even stitch a design that normally I might say, why would I stitch that? But I want to see how, what kind of outcome I could get with that particular design.
So, yeah, that makes perfect sense. It's an experiment.
Well, like the hummingbird projects that I did, I don't know if you've seen them. So that's from a coloring book. And my point was just to demonstrate that you can take these designs from these adult coloring books that are so trendy, you know, right now. And they can make great embroidery designs. And there's no reason why you can't use them, you know, as long as you're not, you know, you're just using them for yourself and you bought the book, so you can, you know, embroider them. So I started that hummingbird design to kind of demonstrate that. And I had much greater goals for that design. I planned to stitch it at least two different ways. One as kind of a white work design. And then one, actually three different ways. So one as white work, one in color, in very basic surface embroidery, and then using cotton floss and basic stitches. And then the third way was going to be with silk and to make it a little more advanced. But the project is a lot bigger than you think. You see it in a coloring book and it looks relatively, you know, it's the size of a coloring book. How bad could it be? But when you translate that onto cloth, and then the slowness of stitching, you know, you're not using pens and pencils here. It just took a long time. And as I started to work on it, I realized that how I would interpret that in stitches, it didn't work for me as a basic design because it was already such a complex design. So I started doing, you know, long and short stitch and lots of filling stitches and blending a lot of colors and things like that. There's a lot of padded satin stitch on it. And so kind of a little more advanced techniques, not just the line stitches that I originally envisioned. And it took too long. I mean, it just took so long.
Right. Well, no, I can appreciate that.
So, yeah, when you started that one, I literally was going to stitch along with you and didn't get started right away. And then as it unfolded, I thought, "Holy smokes, this is this is a little more than I want to dig into." So then I just watched it unfold and stayed out because
it was fun to stitch. I enjoyed stitching it and I loved the colors, even though they're not my typical colors. Some of them, but it's not something that I picked it to see how to develop that type of design and to show that, yes, you can develop that into embroidery.
Right.
Is it something that I normally would pick just for myself if I were picking a pattern for the fun of it? You know, maybe not, but I did like stitching it. It was a lot of fun.
Well, it ended up being a stunning piece. I mean, when you got all done, it really...
It's beautiful.
It's in a box.
Another one of the box pieces.
Yeah.
But see, so I've been trying to sort of figure out what the benefit of needlepoint versus embroidery is. And I've been working on a surface embroidery piece, and I think I'm getting why it is that Gary doesn't want to do surface embroidery and why he wants to stick to needlepoint, because it's so slow. Surface embroidery is, well, especially for me, because I'm just really learning. So I'm very, very slow and just very precise about it because I want it to come out well. So I don't feel like I have the facility yet to be able to just whip through it and get it, you know, perfect satin stitch and everything's going to be lined up and quickly. I'm just very slow. Fast and sloppy, or it's going to be neat and slow. So right now it's just neat and very slow. But it, you know, to do even the smallest areas when you're doing satin stitch or long and short stitch, it takes a long, long time, you know, compared to when I was working on the Debbie Rowley piece, which is a needlepoint, you know, you can cover a good amount of canvas in a short period of time. So there's a lot more immediate gratification there. Whereas this is, it almost becomes that meditative thing, even though I thought it would be the opposite, because, you know, I can work on a leaf that's, you know, an inch square and I can work on that for an hour. Yeah. Because I want all the stitches to line up and I want it to, you know, to look nice and, you know, working with silks and doing all those things. It does take forever. So looking at the hummingbird piece, my goodness, how long that must have taken to do, because there is so much covered.
Yeah, that's the thing. It wasn't originally supposed to be covered that much.
Yeah.
But so what are you working on?
What am I working on? Mm-hmm. So I am working on, actually, it's a stump work piece. So this is my foray into, the style is so appealing to me, mm-hmm. that even though it is kind of an advanced technique, I would say, or there's some advanced work in there. Mm-hmm. I just really wanted to try it because I just find it so beautiful. So it's a small, the whole piece itself is probably 8 inches by 6 inches. And it's flowers and, it's simple, in that regard, but it's exactly what you were just talking about. It's, you know, a little bit of raised satin stitch, you know, different methods of padding, either padding with stitches underneath or padding with felt. And then the stump work pieces itself will be just making the slips that then will get stitched onto the piece. Yeah. So right now I'm still, you know, well into the surface work, or a little bit off the surface work. I guess the surface stuff I've finished, and now I'm into the padded work. So it's the raised work, but it's still on the silk that I'm stitching. So I haven't started the slips that are on, you know, on another piece that will then get stitched on.
Right. So that's Celeste's poppy.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. It's Celeste's poppies, which I really liked it. Yeah. And I've been wanting to try it. And it just seemed like a nice piece to learn on because it's not tremendous. Why are you laughing? Yeah.
Well, it's a nice piece to learn stump work on.
Yes. Yes.
So the thing is, though, one of the reasons it takes so long is because most of the time you're working with one strand of floss out of six.
Correct. I'm working with one strand of silk. And so it's stitch by stitch by stitch.
Yeah. So when you're doing needlepoint or canvas work, you're usually using heavier fibers.
Correct.
And your holes are 18 per inch, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's going to cover a lot faster. It's like the difference between... It's the difference between doing crewel work. So if you started mm-hmm. with crewel work,
yes,
it would cover a lot faster because you're working with wool and it's a much heavier fiber.
Yeah, yeah. I have a couple of pieces going, and the crewel piece. What I pick up when I feel like this is just, you know, dragging on forever. So then I'll pick up the crewel piece and then, you know, whip off an area 3x3 and in you know, just a sitting. Because of exactly that, you know, doing the same stitch, doing a long and short stitch in wool, you know, you get done a lot faster.
Yeah, it covers a lot faster. So what kind of wool are you using?
In the crewel piece?
Yeah.
It was a kit. So it was it is the kit wool. So probably nothing terrific.
Well, it depends, I think, on the designer or... you know, where you get the kit.
Yeah, this was just, it just was another, I'd like to try that because I haven't done those stitches and I haven't stitched that before. And it was a design that I happened to like to look at. So I said, all right, let me try this. And it was a not much of an investment financially. So it was a good beginning piece. So if it came out terrible, it wouldn't be the end of the world. And so far it's been great. I really like it.
That's good. I have a theory. Okay. It's one of my pet theories. And it's so I'm glad it's turning out and that you like it. That's great. And that's, I think, the most important thing, you know, when you're trying a new technique. But one thing that I hear from people often is, especially when it comes to wool or crewel work, is I hate this thread.
It doesn't feel good. I will give you that. It doesn't feel good in your hand.
Or it pills and it knots and things like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has to do with the quality of the thread. So sometimes you can do the absolute best embroidery that you can do. And actually, technically, your embroidery might just be beautiful. But if you're using the wrong thread, it's going to be frustrating.
Yes.
And the outcome is going to be you know, less than what it could be. You know what I mean?
No, that's a good point.
So I think that a lot of times beginners will start with, and I'm not calling you a beginner, I'm just, you know,
thinking in general. That's very fair.
But beginners will start with something inexpensive that they find at a craft store. And if that's what they can afford to get to try, I think it's a very good idea and they should. But if their experience is a frustrating one.
Right. It may just be the materials.
Yeah. It's not necessarily, hey, I hate stitching because it's so frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
It could be frustrating because of the materials that you're using.
Yes.
So that's not directed necessarily towards you, but in general.
No, that's very fair.
And I get people who will buy the package of craft floss as opposed to, say, DMC.
Yeah.
And they say, my thread always knots. It's pilling, it shreds, you know, that kind of stuff. Well, what thread are you using? Well, just craft floss. Or it ran when I rinsed it, you know, which is devastating. But the thing is, DMC in the scheme of things, especially here in the United States, it's not that expensive.
It isn't.
So, especially when you can get, you can get it at the big box stores. So, I would always say go for the brand, the name brand floss in that case, like DMC, over a no name craft floss, because you can't be assured that the quality is that great, and your whole experience is going to be frustrating, and that's not why you're stitching. You don't want to be frustrated, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, that's definitely, that's a lesson I learned actually twice. So knitting, that's definitely the case, because there's a big, big difference between knitting on $1.99 acrylic that you got on sale at the hardware store because it was cheap and you were there and that's what you have. And I have stitched things I've knitted things using that, and some of them have come out. Some of them have finished and some of them have been terrible. And a lot of it is the wool, because it's uncomfortable. It doesn't do what it's supposed to do. And then you switch to something like a beautiful hand-dyed merino and you're like, oh, this is a completely different animal.
Yeah, it's a different experience.
It completely. And the other thing, so this is one thing that Gary taught me too, was photography. So when I was first starting out, I had a reasonably decent, consumer level camera, and I would take pictures and they would come out reasonably okay. Mm-hmm. And then someone gave me some good advice along the way, which is, try, even if you can't afford it yet, try borrowing a good lens, like a really good lens with good glass, and just see the difference. And I did that. And I would look at the pictures and say, holy cow, I can't believe I took these pictures. And it really was the lens. That was the difference, because it was able to pick up color and detail and things that otherwise wouldn't have been there. So it is very much about the materials that you use. So I agree with that. And sometimes it's worth, waiting on so this is something I do all the time. I will wait on a project until I can afford to do it the right way. Opposed to just flinging, things at, because of that exact reason. It's no fun to do it if you hate it because you're working with materials that, don't cooperate. And then you pick up, a silk and all of a sudden your skills are improved. And it's not really that your skills are improved.
It's just that when
you have the right material that's not fighting with you the whole time, it's a lot easier to get what you want out of it.
Right.
So,
and it boils down to another thing. Well, okay. So the principle would be always use the best supplies that you can afford.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not like you. I will save money to be able to afford a certain, supplies or whatever, or a kit that I want or something. I'm not an advocate of going into debt for a hobby. Mm-hmm. So I'll save for that. But at the same time, okay, say you can't afford, you know, the top thing, instead of going for the absolute bottom thing,
right?
look for a substitute in the middle that mm-hmm. is better than the worst. You know what I mean?
Right. Or sometimes it's choosing a piece that's not as big, you know.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, if you're using half as much material, then you can afford twice as good material to work.
That's right. That's right.
So wait, let me write that down. Well, how did that go?
But it's true, you know. And it's like the oh, I don't know. Cuz I don't want to sound like a fabric snob, you know, or even a thread snob. Because I'll use cotton and I'll use, mm-hmm. You know, what I have on hand or whatever. But if I am going to invest my time, which that's out of everything else, that is the most valuable thing. If you're going to put 400 hours into something, you know, at least invest in the materials that are worthy of that kind of time from you.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So
I think that's fair. Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I don't, again, it's not a snob thing. It's just that I've wasted time. I've wasted time using inferior products. So I just know that in the end, you'll always be happier with a finished product that looks absolutely fantastic, not just because you're a good stitcher, but because the materials were good.
Yes.
Because you can take a mediocre stitcher and give that person really good materials, and their stitching is going to look good.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take a mediocre stitcher, you know, and I don't mean mediocre in a, you know, derogatory way. I'm just saying a mediocre stitcher, and give them really bad materials, and their stitching is going to look really bad, you know? Mm-hmm. But if you take an excellent stitcher and they use really bad materials, well, it's not going to look as good as it could, you know?
Right.
I'm not going to say it would look mediocre, but it wouldn't look as good as it could. Mm-hmm. But if that stitcher uses excellent materials, you know, their work is going to be phenomenal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense or if I'm just, you know.
Of course it does. It makes sense.
See, for me, it's the yeah, but. You know, if I'm going to do something and finish it and show someone, look what I did, and they go, wow, that's beautiful. And then in my mind, or I actually verbalize, yeah, but if I'd done this, or if I'd used this, you know, it would be that much better. Then,
that's right.
You know, why not, even you have to wait a few weeks and save up some money, why not wait and so that you don't have that? You don't always have attach that to the piece. And, you know, because, I mean, I learned that in photography. It's a beautiful shot. Well, it is, but, you know, if I'd done this and I'd done that, well, then why didn't you do that? You know, get off your butt and go do it and do it right. And then you can hold it up and say, yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with that. That worked out well. And, that to me, that's the acid test is if you're going to have to make an excuse every time, then, you know, back up and do it right. And
that's right.
But I think it's an interesting challenge. Give crappy material to an expert stitcher and see how well they can do.
I was going to say, I would imagine that somebody that is a very, very experienced stitcher would be able to compensate for certain things.
Well, they can, sure, to a degree.
To a degree, right. You know. So they'll know, you know, little things like, okay, this one I'm going to use much shorter thread lengths because I know that this is going to fray like crazy.
Right.
So, you know, things like that, I would imagine. Right. But rough thread is going to be rough thread no matter what you do. But, you know, also, depending on what you're stitching, that might be a benefit. Maybe that's what you're looking for. If you're not for a fine piece, if you are looking for something rustic or you want something to look like period stitching,
right, you know, folk embroidery.
Yeah, you don't want it to be, you know, a perfect
right.
thread at all, because that would look very, it would look wrong.
Right. So it does. It depends on what you're doing. But mm-hmm. but in general, you know, I think that the better the materials, the better the outcome.
Yep.
Yeah. True of everything.
Yep. Yeah. We got to stop.
Yeah. We.
My goodness.
I have to be the wet blanket here. We got to stop. Mary, always a treat.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mary.
It's always fun. It's always fun to chat.
Yep.
So all right. Call whenever you want.
We'll do that. Appreciate the time, Mary. Thanks to everybody for listening. And Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.
Okay. Take care. Bye.